John Leguizamo calling Elon Musk's AI-generated film Odyssey fake, soulless, and empty is both a cultural critique and a political one. Leguizamo has been a consistent and vocal critic of Musk's political trajectory, so there's no pretending this is a purely aesthetic judgment. But the substance of his critique, that AI-generated film lacks the human experience that makes narrative art meaningful, is a position that a substantial community of filmmakers, writers, and scholars share, and it's arriving at a moment when the entertainment industry is actively negotiating what AI-generated content means for the creative workforce.
Amazon dropping the OpenAI film Artificial and Andrew Garfield breaking his silence about it is the second major AI-adjacent entertainment story in a week, and together they suggest that the entertainment industry's relationship with AI content is becoming a site of genuine cultural conflict. Garfield hasn't detailed what he said publicly yet, but the fact that a project starring a major film actor was dropped by a major streaming platform suggests that the commercial calculus on AI-branded entertainment is more uncertain than the tech companies initially assumed.
Stephen Colbert receiving an anti-censorship award from the Before Columbus Foundation after CBS canceled Dides. The Late Show is a moment that crystallizes something about the current media environment. The Before Columbus Foundation has been giving American Book Awards since 1978. It's not a political partisan organization. It's a multicultural literary nonprofit. Honoring Colbert in this context frames the Late Show cancellation not as a business decision, but as a free expression event. Whether that framing is accurate is debatable. CBS has not publicly confirmed the reason for cancellation, but the symbolism of the award is clear.
The main Democratic Senate nominee facing scrutiny over both her record and the nomination process itself is a campaign story with structural implications. Maine has a ranked choice voting system and a history of competitive Senate races. Susan Collins has survived multiple cycles that Democrats thought they could flip. A nominee entering with process questions and record scrutiny simultaneously is starting from a weakened position in a state where the general electorate has shown it will cross party lines.
Musk reviving America PAC for a massive Republican midterm push, with the DHS worst of the worst judicial targeting series, Trump claiming Supreme Court rulings cost trillions, and Trump asking the Supreme Court to revive the Clinton RICO suit. These are four distinct stories that share a through line about institutional legitimacy. Each one represents a pressure point on a different institution: independent judiciary, electoral process, federal courts, legal norms. The cumulative institutional pressure is the story, not any single data point.
Marcus, I want to use the second half of this segment for what we call the "what if we're wrong" exercise. Because the claim I think we're most confident about today, and the one I think deserves the hardest scrutiny, is the consensus view that the Strait of Hormuz closure is the dominant driver of global oil market stress right now.
I'll defend the claim first. The Hormuz Strait carries approximately 20% of global seaborne oil. We have documented tanker incidents overnight. Iran has issued an explicit indefinite closure statement. The IEA link between Middle East conflict and EV demand acceleration is a real data point. The $135 billion Pentagon contracting round confirms active military engagement. The case that Hormuz is the primary oil shock driver seems solid.
Here's the counterargument. China quietly cut its oil imports by 5 million barrels per day. And by the IEA's own account, that cut helped avert what would otherwise have been a global crisis. That means China, not the Strait of Hormuz, may be the actual swing variable in global oil prices right now. If China had maintained its prior import levels, the Hormuz closure would have hit an already tight market. China's unilateral reduction created a demand buffer. So the question is, are we watching the wrong variable? If China decides to resume full imports tomorrow, for domestic, economic, or political reasons, global oil stress could spike regardless of whether Hormuz reopens.
And then there's the assumption embedded in the China arms Iran framing. Trump said he'd be disappointed. But what if China already is supplying Iran in ways we can't see and has been for months? The military hardware evidence from Iskander missiles showing 62 American components that traveled through intermediary states suggests these supply networks are not well monitored. If there's a parallel Chinese to Iranian supply route that's not in the public record yet, our entire threat model for the Iran conflict is missing a key input.
The specific indicator to watch: China's crude oil import data, which the Chinese government reports monthly with roughly a 3-week lag. If the July and August import figures show China returning to elevated levels while Hormuz is still restricted, that would confirm that Chinese demand is an independent driver rather than a responding variable. That data will surface in late August and September. If we're wrong about Hormuz being the primary driver, the oil price dynamics over the next 3 months will diverge from the Strait's operational status in ways that should be visible.
Also worth watching, any indication of Chinese hardware appearing in Iranian military equipment documentation, similar to the methodology Ukraine used to find those 62 American components in the Iskander. If that forensic approach is applied to Iranian weapons captures, it becomes the ground truth.